You're listening to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M, where she breaks down the nitty gritty basics of nursing concepts. Hello and welcome to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M. Today I'm going to break down valvular heart disease, specifically valve stenosis and valvular regurgitation, and separate those two out because sometimes they can be hard to understand. So the first one I'm going to start with is valve stenosis. And the stenosis of the heart valves is just a constriction or narrowing of the orifice that is the valve. And so in a normal heart without valvular stenosis, the pressure on either side of an open valve is normally equal. However, in a stenotic valve, the valve opening is smaller, and so the forward flow of the blood is impaired, and that creates a difference in pressure on the two sides of that open valve. If you think about it this way, a normal, this is super hypothetical, but just something that I wrap my brain around with it. If I think of a normal heart valve being this diameter of a quarter, basically in valve stenosis, you can have various gradients of stenosis where that valve is more narrow than what it should be. So instead of having a quarter-sized valve, I might have a nickel or a dime or a penny-sized valve, and it can go smaller in nature the more severe it is. So if you think that in a quarter-sized normal valve, the pressure on either side is totally the same, if you move and now you have a valve that is so stenosed that the opening is now a dime size, the pressure on the forward flow is going to be higher than on that side than it is on the other side. And so that now you have a pressure shift there. Valve stenosis can affect all the valves, really, depending on the etiology of the problem. And so when we think about valve disorders and stenosis, you really need to consider the specific valve that is affected. So if the mitral valve has become stenosed, the valvular tissue thickens and narrows the valve opening, and that prevents blood from flowing from the left atrium to the left ventricle. So you're going to have more blood that accumulates in that left atrium because there's a higher pressure on that side and it can't get through the narrowed valve into the left ventricle in an efficient manner. Similarly, if we think about the aortic valve, if the aortic valve has become stenosed, that tissue, that valvular tissue thickens and narrows that valve opening, and it prevents blood from flowing from the left ventricle into the aorta. So when we're thinking about valve disorders and stenosis versus regurgitation, you have to have a really clear understanding of what part of the heart is being affected. And then once you know where what part of the heart and you say stenosed, you just know that the forward flow is going to be impeded. So what does that look like in your patient? And here's where the pie analogy comes in. How do they present? Well, first of all, if we have an understanding that stenosis is just, it's preventing adequate flow forward, it's going to depend on the valve. But some of the things that we might see in our assessment and presentation of these patients are going to be fatigue, especially if you've got aortic stenosis. If the blood cannot get from the left ventricle into the aorta and for perfusion, your perfusion is not going to happen, which means all of those cells are not going to get the good oxygen and nutrients that it needs, so you might be fatigued. You're likely to have swollen legs and feet. Which valves might that be apparent in? Well, for example, the pulmonic valve, if that is stenosed, we know that the blood flow of the heart goes to the right atrium, to the right ventricle, through the pulmonic valve. Now, if that valve has become stenosed and the forward flow is impeded, you are going to have a backup of blood into the right ventricle and the right atrium and into the body because it cannot get through that pulmonic valve well enough. So you might have swollen legs and swollen feet. These patients might have chest discomfort or pain just because the heart is now having to work extra hard. They might be dizzy. Dizziness, which valve might that occur in? The aortic valve, because if your aortic valve is stenosed and the blood cannot get from the left ventricle to the aorta for perfusion, it's a perfusion issue. Again, we talked about fatigue being a component of the aortic valve stenosis, but so is dizziness. Most of these patients will also then develop some sort of heart murmur because, and the heart murmur is just an extra turbulence of blood flow. They might have irregular heart rhythms because it's trying to compensate, and sometimes they're going to have palpitations. Now, in comparison to valve regurgitation, and regurgitation is the incomplete closure of the valve leaflets that results in backward flow of blood from the body, in the body. So it's an incompetence or an insufficiency is what we have also like described it as. And when we talk about that, again, it's going to be dependent on the valve that is affected. So if the mitral valve has some sort of regurgitation, the valve is incompetent and prevents the complete valve closure during systole, which is the squeezing of the heart. Systole is the squeezing, diastole is the filling. So again, it's completely dependent on which valve is affected and whether or not we're talking about a stenosis or an insufficiency slash regurgitation. You might see it written both ways. You can break this down specific by valves. So your aortic valve, for example, which allows blood to flow from the left ventricle to the rest of the body, if it's stenosed and that narrowing is really small compared to what it's supposed to be, the pressure inside the left ventricle compared to the aorta is going to be higher. And the symptoms that a patient might have is they're going to be, think about it, blood can't get out of the left ventricle to the body. So they're going to have dyspnea with exertion. They might have angina, again, because blood has to leave the heart to actually perfuse the heart. They are going to be fatigued. They're going to have orthopnea. Compared to the aortic insufficiency, when those valve leaflets just don't close completely, these patients are going to have maybe dyspnea. They're also going to have angina. They will have tachycardia because the heart is going to try to speed up because it has to work harder to pump the same amount of blood as it did when the leaflets were working well, because every time it squeezes, maybe only 50% of the blood is leaving the chamber when it used to be 80%. So now the heart has to try to compensate. The other thing with aortic, or not specifically aortic, but any of the regurgitations, is one of your key assessment components is that you are going to hear murmurs, like blowing diastolic murmurs, or it's going to be very apparent because there's that turbulent blood flow that you can hear in the insufficiency. And part of the crazy thing is that regardless of whether or not someone has a stenotic or a regurgitative valve, you're going to hear murmurs in both of these cases, because murmur is just the turbulent blood flow of the blood inside the chambers of the heart. The difference is that with stenosis, the blood can't get out through that, the forward blood flow is impaired, versus regurgitation, where every time it squeezes, the valve, because it doesn't close completely, results in the backward blood flow back into the chamber. So in one of them, in the stenosis, the blood can't get out of the chamber. In the other one, the blood can't get out of the chamber because it keeps flowing back into the chamber after every sort of contraction. This leads us to asking ourselves, well, how is this diagnosed? Valve disorders are often diagnosed with people who have, it can be either a sudden illness or it can slowly develop into symptoms over the years. And so when you've got a patient that you are asking about and you're worried about some sort of valve disorder, you want to ask about things like, rheumatic fever. And rheumatic fever is the result of a strep throat that does not get treated, that affects and damages the heart valves. Reflect back to endocarditis, which I have a podcast on. You should go and listen to it. We also will do diagnostics. So we are going to give a really clear history, like, do they have a history of endocarditis? Did they have rheumatic fever as a child? They're going to get a chest x-ray. They're likely to get an EKG, maybe even a stress test, and sometimes even an echocardiogram. And the primary cause of these valve disorders is scarring of those valve leaflets. And so because of that, most cases of in adults, mitral valve stenosis specifically results from the rheumatic heart disease, which rheumatic mitral stenosis is still widespread in many developing countries. So these are things to think about as you move forward. The question we need to ask ourselves is, how do we treat these, regardless of whether or not it is a stenosis or it's a insufficiency / regurgitation? How are we going to fix it? There are both medical and surgical treatment options for patients with valve disorders. From a medical standpoint, things that we can do is prevent the recurrent rheumatic fever or prevent infective endocarditis, which will subsequently prevent continued damage to the valves. The other thing that we want to try to do if someone has a valve disorder and from a medical perspective is we want to try to prevent them from developing heart failure. And there's a myriad of ways that we kind of go about doing that. We can do that with having them alter their diet, giving them medications. Then we also want to consider anticoagulation and ways to do symptom relief. And then we're going to monitor and treat them for dysarrhythmias. Taking this medical approach is the conservative approach to treating patients with potential valve disorders, especially if it's not, they're not severely damaged or they don't have severe symptoms as a result. But the other option is, of course, the surgical approach. And there's two options ultimately when it comes to a surgical approach for the treatment of valve disorders. The first one is just doing a repair procedure. The second option, which is more invasive, is actually doing a complete valve replacement. From the repair options, one option is a percutaneous balloon valvuloplasty, which is where we take a balloon catheter and we pass it from the femoral vein through the atrial septum to the mitral valve, or we'll go in through the femoral artery just straight to the aortic valve. And we will actually take this balloon and we will inflate it to enlarge the orifice. So this is used in a stenosis procedure. From a nursing perspective, if your patient has this percutaneous balloon valvuloplasty, what we're going to want to do in the after fact of it all is we're going to want to monitor these patients for bleeding at the catheter insertion sites, irregardless of whether or not it went into an artery or a vein, it was the femoral artery or the femoral vein. And while the femoral artery, we need to tread more cautiously with because it's a pressurized system, it's still a huge vein and vessel and artery that we're going into. So regardless of which one we go into, bleeding is a huge thing that we want to be cognizant of post-procedure and watch, in addition to monitoring for any signs of systemic emboli. Again, we're going into the heart, we're blowing a valve up and making the orifice larger to allow proper blood flow to go through. But by doing that, right, we have the potential to, you know, alter the blood. And yes, they will have received anticoagulation during the procedure, but they still had the potential of having some sort of microemboli that we didn't see on that valve because it was a damaged valve before we did it. And so we just want to be cognizant and monitor for any sort of an embolic event that might occur. And then, of course, we're going to want to monitor for signs of regurgitant valve by monitoring that cardiac rhythm, listening to the heart sounds, keeping an eye on their overall cardiac output. Because with that stenotic valve, we go in there and we make the orifice much larger. Well, we've just done that, but we have also now placed this patient at risk for regurgitation because now we've blown those leaflets up to try to open the orifice and breaking that those stenosed valves apart. So that's one option for a surgical repair. The other two repair options are called an annuloplasty and a commiserotomy. The annuloplasty is specific to the mitral valve, and that's basically where they would go in and tighten and suture the malfunctioning valve to eliminate or basically greatly reduce the regurgitation. And we can either do that through a percutaneous option, like in through the femoral vein or artery, or it would be done through an open surgical procedure. The commiserotomy is where we basically would go in and thrombi are removed and calcium deposits are debrided, and then that valve is incised and widened. Essentially, what you need to know in the aftermath of all of this, if someone has a valve disorder and they opted for a surgical treatment to fix it, our responsibility lies in the fact that we need to monitor these people for embolic events, and we need to monitor their heart rate, their rhythm, their cardiac output, and ultimately their site of wherever we decided to go in. You want to monitor for bleeding because they've also been anticoagulated for these procedures. That's the repair part of it. Now, the valve replacement, there's two options for a valve replacement. There's either a mechanical or a biologic option that they can go for. The mechanical prosthetic valves are prosthetic valves that are super duper durable, but they carry a risk of clot formation as it's super high for the body to react to the artificial materials. And so patients that get an artificial mechanical prosthetic valve are going to be on anticoagulation for the rest of their life. versus patients who opt for a biologic valve. When they get those, they are going to need anticoagulation initially, but then they should be able to come off of the anticoagulation once the valve has healed and it's in place. And usually with the bioprosthetic valves that we use, it's either a porcine valve that's coming from a pig, or a bovine valve, which would come from a cow, or it can even come from a human cadaver. And these valves are less durable than the mechanical prosthetic valves, but patients will eventually not need to be on an anticoagulant because it is a tissue valve. And so the risk of the clot formation is much, much smaller, and that long-term anticoagulation wouldn't necessarily be indicated. Regardless, for these valve replacements, it's almost always an open heart surgical approach. And so when we think about the nursing care for a valve replacement, it's going to come again closely with any post-operative interventions that we would need to do. So monitoring for signs of bleeding, monitoring again cardiac output, and we're going to watch the heart rhythm, and we're going to make sure they're not having any sort of heart failure. And then we're going to educate them significantly on post-operative things like, you know, bracing with a pillow when they need to cough or anything like that. From a education perspective, our big responsibilities for educating are going to be about anticoagulation therapy, especially if we consider, you know, whether they had a mechanical or biologic valve, or if we just did a repair. And then really teaching about prophylactic antibiotics. Again, we want to prevent any sort of endocarditis for these people. And we know that valve disease or mechanical valve replacements place patients at higher risk for the development of infective endocarditis. And then we want to teach them when to seek medical care. So we want them to be well-versed in what does an infection look like when it's going to occur? What does heart failure potentially look like? And then if they have any planned invasive or dental procedures, you need to strongly remember to consider making sure they understand that they are likely, depending on what they've had done, going to need antibiotics to address that. So that's all I've got. That's the nitty gritty of valve stenosis and valve regurgitation. Sorry, I can't isolate it and say, oh, this is what we'll see with a mitral versus a tricuspid versus an aortic or a pulmonic, because realistically, it's about flow pattern. So you master flow pattern depending on if it's stenosis or regurgitation, and you understand the things that we can do to fix it, you'll set sail and be set for life. That's all. Go forth and keep on learning.